One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and wonder whether the butt crack exists.
That was
and last
then they
week. Give you all the week's news from both bars at AFC Wimbledon. John.
Yeah.
John, I have a question.
Yep.
Did you know why when geese make V's in the sky, there's sometimes like one of the sides is longer than the other side?
For aerodynamic reasons?
No, it's because there's more geese on one side of the other, than the other side.
Is this like absurdist humor or is this like waiting
for
Godot
geese
stuff?
On that side. It's longer because there's more geese.
Yeah, so that's just like a pure waiting for Godot joke where there's no punchline?
It's because there's more geese.
Is there something I'm not getting?
There's not something you've got it. You're all the way there.
Okay. Well, congratulations on reinventing the Ionesco play. It's fun. I never really got that stuff in English class, and I continue to not really get it now.
Why is one of the sides of the V longer? Because there's more geese. Oh, John, do you want to...
Why doesn't Godot ever show up?
Well, because he's God.
I mean, ish. First off, we don't have to get into a theological argument right at the top of the podcast.
Godot, I mean, I don't want to make too big of a thing about it.
Yeah. It's our big
Godot may not show up because Godot may not exist at all.
Is it our biggest disagreement, the theistic stuff?
Uh-huh.
And by the way, I'm not totally sure we have a disagreement. I was just reading a great piece about an atheist chaplain, a humanist chaplain, who served an atheist death row inmate. And I was fascinated by it because at the end of it, I was like, am I an atheist chaplain? But I do believe in God, however tentatively and with a definition of God that doesn't totally line up with a lot of people's. Do you think that's our biggest disagreement, or do we have a bigger disagreement, a more fundamental disagreement somewhere along the line? Because people ask us about this a lot, like, how come you guys don't fight or whatever? And
yeah,
I mean, we do fight, but never about anything important, really.
Yeah, no, we fight about like the things that married couples fight about, you know?
Right.
Where it's like, are we going to put resources toward this or this? Like,
we
what's
fight
more
a lot
important,
about, like,
the dishes or the laundry?
Yeah, and like we have a lot of fights that are some version of who took out the trash or will you take out the trash? No, I took out the trash
Why
last time.
Why haven't you took out the trash? I took out the trash last time. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the main John and Hank fights.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, on philosophical stuff, I don't know. We're pretty in the similar place.
Yeah.
And whether or not souls exist doesn't really come into it most of the time.
Doesn't. It does.
It still seems really important to prevent people from suffering whether or not a piece of them is immortal.
I mean, almost equally important regardless, especially according to my faith tradition, which is pretty focused on what's happening here and not too focused on what's happening after. I think after... You know, this is something I think about a lot. I always say to Hank, like, I don't want to do that because then I might go to hell. And Hank's like, but hell doesn't exist. And I'm like, I know.
That's not I'm what aware. I mean.
I know. I mean, like, I would go to hell if hell existed and were exactly like what I think it would be like if, you know, like.
Yeah.
And I don't think hell would be eternal flames either. I just think it would be sort of like, I not to sound cheesy about it, but I think it would be like distance from the divine, you know, which is like kind of what you're creating yourself when you act in a way that's commensurate with what would send you to hell.
Interesting. Interesting. There's something there that does align with me, where there is like a sacred that is, you know, made up by me. And like the things that you get you closer to the sacred things are good things. And I can see things that are appealing that I like that get me further away from it. And
yeah.
And like that's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your case, it actually just has it's just one thing, Twitter.
No, it's more than Twitter. But Twitter and all the other things like Twitter have the same root.
That's true. But you're not.
I want to be abused by strangers and also to abuse them.
Yeah.
And
that's part of it. But you have another.
To get attention and feel feelings.
I want a lot of attention. I want a lot of attention and really intense sensations, regardless of whether they're pleasurable or productive. I just want them. I want them now.
Yeah. And I had not that always. Earlier. I want to just say that this is a thing that does not always happen to me, but it sometimes does. And
no, for me, it's mostly when I'm down. Like I've been sick the last few days, and I've spent almost the entire last 2 days in bed and just like sleeping all the time. And so then I'm already down, and then I searched my name on Tumblr. And why did I search my name?
Oh boy,
Tumblr. Why did
Ooh,
I?
Boy.
What caused me to do that? Right, like. Now, I have made it clear before that I search my tags. So, like, mm-hmm. It's not total, but I, you know, like, I don't have to. I didn't have to do that. And then I did it. And then I liked some of what I learned and I didn't like other things that I learned, but I felt things. I had feelings.
You felt a bunch of things.
I had big feelings and it kind of was replacing some kind of emptiness inside of me. So, there's that part of it. There's that I think separates me from the sacred. And I think. Is the kind of thing I would do more of if I wanted to go to hell, if hell existed. Then there's this thing that you don't really have, but I have big time, which is that I am seduced by the things of the world.
What does that mean? Like objects?
Like fancy wine?
Oh, yeah. I'm seduced by things of the world.
No, you're
just
not.
Just different ones than you.
No, I can't name a single thing of the world you're seduced by. Every single time we go somewhere fancy, you're like, I don't know. I mean, I guess the bed's a little nicer, but it doesn't matter to me. I just put me in a Motel 6. It's all the same to old Hanky.
That's not... No, I like it. There are things I like. I like.
What do you like?
I like private workout classes.
Oh,
where I
God.
Just have like one person and me and Catherine instead of like the thing. I know I said as I was saying,
wow.
I was like, John's not going to think this one counts.
Oh my
but
gosh.
But I do. I think it's
hold
a
on,
luxury.
I got,
like,
hey, hold on, Hank. I'm sorry. The devil is on the other line. just got to answer it. Hey, bud. I know you have tempted him with the private workout classes. Wow. What a Faustian bargain you've laid before his feet.
I like a nice dinner. I like expensive food prepared by experts. I like a fancy hotel. I do.
I mean, I've been to a lot of fancy hotels with you, and you are not nearly as sick as I am in the fancy hotel business. I have an illness.
No, you, yes. Well, here's the situation. What I really like is to plan a dope trip for the fam.
Like our trip to Jamaica or whatever?
Yeah.
Like
I'm planning like a trip to Denver and Colorado Springs right now. And I'm just like, it's going to be so fun. And we're going to do all this stuff. And here are all the places we're going to go and all the things we're going to do. But you're right. When I'm like, now I'm thinking about the things that we're going to do and the places we're going to go, it's like pretty normal stuff. But still.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to stay in like nice hotels.
Yeah. But you're not going to get like a private tour of the Colorado Rockies baseball stadium.
Can I?
I mean, that's the kind of thing that I would, the kind of thing that I would seek out because I'm a bad person. I'm deeply bad. I'm seduced by the things of the world in a big way.
You know what I did try to do?
Hmm.
So maybe this counts as I tried to get a tour of the I don't know what the organization that runs it, but it's a government lab that's the Ice Core Lab. So it has like all of the America's ice cores.
Yeah.
And I tried, and it's like negative 40 inside, and you have to wear a special coat, and they do like very few tours, but I failed to get in, even with all of my credibility and sway.
Well, that just goes to show you, Hank, that seeking the things of the world is always trouble. It's like trouble. I was reminded of this when I stayed at the Plaza Hotel's Gatsby suite. Not to make it about me, but I stayed at the Plaza Hotel and I requested the Great Gatsby suite, which is just like all these props from the movie, the Baz Luhrmann movie, but it's like real overstuffed in there. It's not actually that big of as I'm saying this, I hate myself. It's not actually that big of a room. The Gatsby suite at the Plaza Hotel in New York City. And the TV's a little far away from the bed for my tastes. I've got anyway, that wasn't the issue. The issue was that I stayed at the fanciest hotel that I could imagine, in the fanciest room that I could imagine, and there was this huge chandelier. I've written about this before in the Anthropocene Reviewed, but there was this huge chandelier, and because of the air conditioning blew through the chandelier, and so it tinkled all night. It was just like tinkle,
oh,
tinkle,
no.
Tinkle, 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 tinkle,
oh,
tinkle.
No.
And finally at like 1 o'clock in the morning, I called down and I was like, guys, this is the worst. I'm so sorry. I can't barely even imagine that these words are coming out of my mouth, but is there any way that I could be moved from the Gatsby suite to a regular room here at the Plaza? And they accommodated my request, and no more tinkle, tinkle.
Oh, man, I'd be up there with duct tape and cardboard trying to close up the vent somehow.
That's how seduced I am by the things of the world. I'm so seduced by the things of the world that I get the things that are so fancy that they're unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes things that are more expensive are worse.
Often. Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes they
are. Yeah,
have
you ever seen Kanye West's sink? Looks awful. Looks like a total... Total unpleasant, like all the time, just water everywhere.
Here's what I'll say. I know we should answer questions from our listeners, but on the topic of like over fancy sinks, I think this is such a rich discussion vein because I used to have an over fancy, at my old house, I had an over fancy bathtub, you know?
Yeah.
It was like too much. It was too much bathtub for me. For what I need in a bathtub, which is to like recreate the experience of when I was 11 years old and we lived in Orlando, Florida, how that bathtub felt. So I do need a bathtub that's bigger than that bathtub because I'm bigger than I was when I was 11. What I don't need is like a bathtub that's a small swimming pool, right?
Right.
And so when we were having this house redone, I was like, listen, I know exactly what I want in terms of a bathtub. Like, I can tell you the measurements because I've done the measurements of, like, my relationship between my 11-year-old self and that bathtub and my current self and the bathtub that I'm looking
for. Yeah. Uh-huh. You've done a lot of baths to do the experiments.
So many. And they were like, that's too small of a bathtub. It won't even it won't even look right in the room. And I was like,
I'm not trying to make it look right in the room. I'm trying to be a little boy again.
I just want to have a bath that feels the right size. And I do. I get to have that every day. And I'm so grateful that I do. So sometimes you're right. It's not about the fanciest thing. It's about the thing that makes you feel like you're 11 again.
Yeah, for sure.
Which for me, come to think of it, is watching soccer and taking baths, which are the two greatest joys of my life outside of my family.
Okay. Now that we've entirely alienated ourselves from everyone.
Oh, there's like six people who are listening who are like nodding along like, yeah, I get that. I get that. Sometimes you don't need the biggest possible bathtub.
Yeah.
Maybe Kanye's listening and he's having a blinding light spiritual awakening, in which case, Kanye.
We got a lot of work to do. You've got a ton of work to do, my friend.
You've got some both internal and external jobs ahead of you, and I wish you the best. I think you need to do that work.
My bathtub is too small. I will say that
it is way too small.
I can barely straighten my legs in it, and I don't mean like lying down. I mean sitting up.
No, your bathtub is both not deep enough and too short.
Yeah, no,
it's sort of
like a deepened shower, it's, like a shower
it's, you know,
pit.
It's for a child. It's so that the child can take baths, and it does that job well. And I'm not really a bath guy anyway. So that's your job. You're the bath one.
All right.
This is one of our deepest disagreements, John.
Come to think of it, we have settled on one because I think, I mean, I'll still take a shower. I understand they get you cleaner. But in terms of relaxation and rejuvenation and feeling reborn into the world, baths, man. Baths literally recreate the experience of baptism.
I mean, do you want to know what gets me rejuvenated and re-experiencing the world is like just being in the world.
Oh, like going outside? Like that's,
well, and or just like working. Just like talking to a person. Like being alone does not, and like silent does not do it for me. I need to be active. I need to be doing something.
That's our biggest disagreement. I don't mind being active, but I want to be alone.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if I'm alone or not.
I love alone.
Yeah. Like if I'm really tired, I cannot get less tired. I can sleep. That will do it. But I cannot get less tired by like quote unquote relaxing.
Interesting. Well, that explains why you've been so relentless since we were born.
Oh, what a thing.
All right, let's answer some questions from our listeners.
Yeah. This first one comes from Lucas, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, but mostly Hank, I'm writing this question as I'm trying to listen to one of your podcasts, but my headphones are almost out of battery. It feels like battery lives should be longer. Like, if we could condense a terabyte of storage onto a chip, why can't we have phones with like a month-long battery life? Insufficiently energized, Lucas." Lucas, well, I have terrible news for you.
Lucas, I think the main answer to your question is actually, I want to throw it back at you. How incredible is it that we have batteries?
Right?
Any Magic. Battery. Like, you can take power with you? What? Yeah.
And put it right in your ear and it'll stick there.
You just carry power and you put it in your ears and it's like, okay, I have enough power to play you Dear Hank and John for 14 hours. And you're like, oh, I needed 16, actually.
mine do not last that long. But
I don't know. I've never. I still use plug-in headphones. I'm scared of batteries, man. I don't understand that technology at all.
Super nice headphones that were sent to me by Olivia Rodrigo.
You know, Olivia Rodrigo sent us the nicest care package. It made Alice cry. It had signed sheet music. It had Olivia O's, her standard... personal cereal. It had all kinds of vinyl, all kinds of signed stuff. Whoa. It was so generous. Tote bags. It was so cool. And I so deeply appreciated it. But what it didn't have were the fancy AirPods that you got.
They're really nice. I like them very much.
I like that we're after comparing our seduction to the things of the world, we just compared our Olivia Rodrigo care packages. We are the worst.
We are the worst. This is it. We're ending our careers. I mean, look.
I hate us. I don't want to listen to this episode.
Oh, no.
And I'm me.
Look, Hank, I was very, like, Olivia Rodrigo's care package arrived at my home, and I was like, what's happening? Did they get the spreadsheets mixed up at the care package factory? Like, maybe Oreos could send me something. Like, send me, the Heinz Beans people, Metamucil, absolutely. Hit me up with your care packages. I'm a 43-year-old science guy. Why is Olivia Rodrigo sending me a care package?
I mean, maybe she knows that she writes bangers and those bangers cross all demographic boundaries.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is the science of Olivia Rodrigo? Unexplainable.
I mean, yeah, it's the rare artist that Alice and I can listen to together without any difference in how enthusiastic we are. The other, of course, T-Swift. But outside of that, there's always going to be a little bit Dad's more enthusiastic about this than Alice, or Alice is more enthusiastic about this than Dad.
So, John, do you know why you can't have a phone that has a month-long battery life?
I have no idea. None.
So it's going to sound like a conspiracy at first, but I'm going to explain it. The reason is that they don't want you to have that. But that's not just that they don't want you to have it. It's that they want to do certain things. And having a month-long battery life isn't on the list, both because you don't want it. You really want 24 hours or a day long, 18 hours of battery life. That's what you want. And so they'll give you more than that because if the battery dies, it'll last longer than that. They also kind of don't want you to have that because eventually they want your battery to die so that you get a new phone. So if you have like a 2-day long battery life, they're optimizing for something that you don't want to start with, but that will decrease the number of phones that you buy. But what they're doing is the batteries are getting better. They're not getting better as fast as chips get better. Like chips can hold more stuff, like can double the amount of stuff that they do or can hold every like 18 months. Whereas the battery life of a volume to amount of, you know, energy is like a 4-year cycle of doubling, which is still fast.
Yeah.
But that means that you could have a phone that had at this point maybe 8 like days of battery life. But in the meantime, we make the battery smaller so that the phone weighs less, so that the phone is smaller. And then we pack in more stuff so the phone can do more things. We pack in more lenses. We pack in more, you know, abilities and chips and whatever else is inside of phones. So the battery takes up less space so that the phone can be smaller. And they are optimizing for a specific amount of battery life, not for the most battery life possible.
All right, but why can't they make headphones that have enough battery life to get you through a whole day of listening? Because it would be too big and bulky?
Yeah, I mean, these wireless headphones weren't really possible 10 years ago.
Right.
Because the batteries weren't small enough. So the batteries have only recently gotten small enough.
Okay.
And then also, you know, if you've had your headphones and have done like charge recharge cycles every day for like a year or so, they're going to have less life than they used to. I have my AirPods. I finally are at the point where they only have like 2 hours of battery life, which is, I think, one of the greatest achievements of my life, that I used a pair of wireless headphones for long enough that I have to replace them because of battery, not because I lost them.
That is good.
Like how did I? I will say I lost one of them, but.
But the other one.
But the other one I still have.
That's great.
And it is, at this point, I cannot use those ones. So thank you to Olivia Rodrigo for sending me these ones.
Very
which
nice.
Which I'm currently in there, in my ear right now. I think that they're getting better and they will continue to get better. But like we only recently arrived in the world where these kinds of headphones were even possible. And now like they're possible for cheap. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, which reminds me, actually, that today's podcast is brought to you by who's that AirPod maker who advertises on all the YouTube channels?
That one. Yeah, I don't know.
That one company that advertises on all the YouTube channels with advertisements so effective that I can't remember their name. Is it like Boron? Blown? Frickin' Ray-Ban?
Raycons. You did it. Wow.
We got there.
It's brought to you by Raycon, an actual brand that makes actual products that are inexpensive wireless headphones.
Should we do a wireless headphone subscription service, Hank? Is that crazy? That's crazy. That's
a
bad idea.
No, I definitely don't want to get in that business. I did have a business idea earlier today that I would love to share with you, John.
Pitch it to me right now.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank. So listen, y'all, you've heard me tell a lot of stories about Policy Genius over the years. Policy Genius, just to be clear, is not an insurance company. It's a marketplace that helps people find and buy insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. So I know we talk a lot about death on this podcast, and then we use that talk about death to talk about Policy Genius, but for real, for serious, you probably need life insurance, and Policy Genius is a great place to get it. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius, because you will leave behind people who love and need you. That's not their tagline, but, you know, I like it.
This podcast is brought to you by my new business idea. If you go to a gallery in your town, the art will be too expensive, probably, because the business model of galleries requires that they only have very expensive art.
Yeah, they get 50% of the price of the painting, usually.
Yeah, and to pay their rent and the staff and such, that they can't like be selling stuff for $200.
That's right.
But there are lots of artists who make great art, but don't make the kind of art that you can sell for $2,000.
Right, because it might be very reproducible, for instance. Like, one of my favorite groups of artists is the Gorilla Girls, and they don't usually make, like, artworks that cost $50,000. They're mostly a group of people who are critical of museum and gallery collections and the way that mm-hmm. artists are compensated and the relationship between capitalism and the art world. And so most of their stuff is posters that are downloadable right. or printable, or mm-hmm. you can buy them for $50.
Right. I think that Etsy has abandoned this market to some extent. It has become an eBay of lots of, you know, drop shipped stuff from China or really easily sort of customizable products that are, you know, not art, they're products. Which is fine. I think that there is a space for a gallery internet thing that has things for sale from artists that are where you live. So you sort of launch it in localities and you get people to like list their stuff, and it's good art that you can have on your wall in that time when you're moving from your poster phase to your art phase, and you can have art that you can afford. And those artists there's lots of amazing artists who aren't in their their business model doesn't fit the gallery business model. And so like most of those people sell by being in and among the art scene in their towns, but art scenes are only so big and a lot of people are not aware of them. So it's just a place where you can go and shop for cool art that is local to you. And then you don't have to get it shipped necessarily. You can go pick it up from the artist or from a centralized location or something like that. And there are other like ways that this is solved. Like coffee shops oftentimes have art right. for sale that is like not gallery cost. But I like this because I think that there's a lot of artists who need ways to sell their work. And there are a lot of people who would buy less expensive art.
Yes. I think there are a lot of people with bare walls right now whose lives would be enriched by having art, and who either don't know how to get that art or think that like there is no art available for that like $25 to $100 price range. And mm-hmm. it's true that I'm going to poke a couple holes in this business idea, and then I'm going to pitch you an alternate business idea.
Okay.
Okay, big hole that I'm going to poke in this business idea. One thing that is very expensive that it's hard to get around the expense of is framing.
For sure.
And so
I actually have a solution for this problem, but
okay.
Go.
If you're talking about, I mean, you can ask artists to create within.
Yes, that's the solution.
Okay. Yeah. You can, and that's something I've seen people do, is to ask artists to create within the confines of existing frame sizes, right? So 18 by 24, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so that solves that problem. I'm going to throw an idea back at you, Hank, because my big issue is that I think this takes a lot of hullabaloo to set up, and I think is...
that is the bigger problem.
technologically complicated, and I can see how it might be vulnerable to abuse and all other kinds of things. I'm going to throw out...
You'd have to, like, curate. You'd have to, like, create... Like, you'd have to earn trust among artists, all kinds of tough stuff.
And you may have to do some level of curation, which is hard, and also, like, just the tech of it would be hard, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, what I thought you were going to pitch, and an idea that I find really interesting, is an Art of the Month club, where a curator... is hired maybe for a 1-year period to find 12 reproducible artworks, limited edition prints, that come to you framed and ready to go for, say, $175.
Per month?
No, for the year.
But you get 12 pieces of art. For $175?
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be great if you could hit that price point. But that seems very hard, especially for framed and shipped.
Maybe my math's wrong. I don't think it's framed and shipped. I think it's not framed. But I think it's
then ready, that case you could hit that.
Ready for framing. And I think
ready for an existing frame you can get at Michael's that's nice.
Ready for an existing frame you can get at Michael's so that it fits. We say, like, look, these are the dimensions we're working with. Can you work with that? If they say no, we get it. Right?
Yeah.
But, like, I have an artwork, it's one of my favorite artworks. It's by Robin O'Neill, and it's a gravestone, and it says, rest in peace, 2020. And then underneath that, it says 2020 to 2020. And, like,
because you can't really say 2019 to 2021, can you? It's just 2020
to 2020. But what a year, you know? Like,
2020 did not make it to 2021.
But it did cram a lot into 2020. I mean, it really filled that year. And what I love about that is that, like, it's a way to support independent artists while also populating your walls. While also, like, if you don't like the artwork 1 month, it's not a huge deal. You can sell it on eBay, or you can just, you know, throw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of it being limited edition, like 1,000 members at any one time. Maybe it's a little more. Maybe it's $25 a month, so it starts to really make sense for the artist. So the artist can make, like, $10,000. From doing this. But, like, for a lot of artists, a $10,000 check is a huge check. Like, most artists, you know, are not showing in galleries and selling their works for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I just think it could be cool and interesting, and you could have a big backstory to it about the selection process, and could just enrich your relationship with art as well by, like, helping you to understand what contemporary art practice might look like in different countries or, you know, I've never thought of that before, but I think that idea has potential. What do you think?
I like that. I like that idea too. I think that that's a lot simpler, and I think that it has you know, less potential for network effects, less potential for how, like, you know, sort of once the if you can get it to a big enough size, then it sort of takes care of itself and it becomes, you know, tech company-y in that way where you don't have to think about it very much, and it can grow with little overhead, but. That's far more of an achievable idea.
Yeah, I think I like my idea because it's achievable, and also because, as it happens, we have a business that already does this, but for coffee.
we definitely do. One of my favorite things about the Awesome Socks Club is that it is a surprise, whereas none of our other things. Like, you don't want to get surprised by soap. Like, you want to know what your soap's
Yeah, you don't want to get surprised by coffee. Right.
Yeah, but you don't want to be, yeah.
But this
Some people,
could be...
I think that you could be surprised by coffee. It's just like, you have to be... That some people want that coffee of the month thing where they're trying out different things all the time.
Right,
that's
not
what I want or what I want to do.
Right.
But this could be like have an element of delight and also have an element of the curation where you get the art and then you can read something about it.
Yeah.
To help understand the artist and what they're going for and, you know, the artist.
And that's like, isn't that part of what's fun about having art on your wall anyway, is being able to, like, look at it and, like, know that backstory or talk to people when they come over and be like, oh, I'm a member of this, like, you know, print of the month club, and like these are the prints from the last 12 months. And then as at the end of the year, I actually like switch out my posters and, or, you know, and put a new ones, whatever your way of doing it is. And you can like talk, I like this one because of this backstory, and this artist is, you know, from Afghanistan, and like, this is how they made this, they made it one way or at a time, whatever the story is. And I just think like that to me is really, I'm looking for ways to like lower barriers to art entry in general. Like, it's very frustrating to me to see like, Target is succeed in the art market in a way that nobody in the art market does, just because like they sell things at a reasonable price point. And I don't know. I think that's a cool idea, and I like that it's a little less complicated, even if it does less. It maybe accomplishes less locally in the communities where it's working, but I think it could still be a big deal for the artists who are selected.
For sure. Yes. And gratefully, we are not the people to choose the art, but there are lots of people out there who are good at that.
Yeah. Like, I live with a person who would do that for our first year.
Yeah.
I like this idea a lot, and I want to know if Nerdfighteria likes it. If you're listening to this podcast and you like this idea,
you somehow are still listening.
Let us know on Twitter if we haven't completely put you off this episode. This next question, and possibly our last question, God, we've just crushed it today, comes from Huxley, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I'm almost 4. Does Spider-Man have to brush his teeth?" From Huxley.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Of course he does.
No, I don't. Huxley, don't let him lie to you. That's like, you know what, Huxley? Hank's saying that because he has a little kid like you who he's trying to scam into brushing his teeth every day.
No. Maybe Wolverine wouldn't need to brush his teeth because he has like super healing.
Yeah.
Does Spider-Man have super healing?
Spider-Man doesn't have super healing, but I do think he has those like spider bots that'll get on his teeth and just clean out the plaque. Little tiny.
Apparently, he does heal faster than normal when injured, but is not completely immune to viruses or the human ailments.
If he's not immune to viruses, then he would still have an issue with plaque.
You want to brush your teeth? Yeah. Well, that's bacteria, but still, yeah.
But I know. I just mean like if he can suffer from immune infections, which it seems like he can.
If you can be ill, then
he could get gingivitis.
Should. Yeah, yeah. He's got to spread. Like, and it's not just. Like, even if Wolverine's like, I can't get gingivitis, these bacteria can live and thrive in my mouth, but it will never actually hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, his girlfriend still cares. His family still cares.
That's true.
The people around him are still bothered.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, Huxley. But, like, the biggest thing is that you yourself, even though you don't like brushing your teeth, and I get that, man, like, I totally understand. I also don't love brushing my teeth.
I think you're making a lot of assumptions about Huxley. Maybe he's just curious about Spider-Man.
No. I think I was able to drill down to Huxley's real concern. I think it lies deeper than Spider-Man. I might be wrong, Huxley, but I think that you might be asking about Spider-Man as a proxy for asking about yourself. And while I get it, what you'll come to understand in time, Huxley, is that if you just brush your teeth every day or even twice a day, what you'll notice over time is that you start to like the feeling of having a really kind of clean mouth. So you'll get there, buddy.
It's great.
You'll get there. It's
a bit of a thing to do, but there we are doing it. I do have to say that Venom, Spider-Man's enemy, definitely does not have to brush his teeth, and probably doesn't even want to, because he does want that smell to follow him around everywhere.
Right.
But also is made of, I don't know, what is Venom made of? Ferrofluids?
Chemicals? Like,
maybe not even chemicals. I think he may be made of some other kind of matter that doesn't exist in our universe.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So unless you want to be Venom when you grow up, Huxley, go ahead and brush those teethers.
That's right. John, can we ask this question about geese?
Please.
It's from Kaya, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, a goose with a nest near my house recently laid a bunch of eggs, and 7 of them hatched. Seeing 7 goslings made me wonder if animals can count to keep track of their young. Would they notice if one doesn't keep up with them? If so, does that mean that animals can do math? Bye-ya, it's Kaya."
This is off topic, but do you think that Ryan Gosling got his surname because back in the day, his people raised geese?
You know, there's got to be a reason. It's got to be something to do with geese.
I guess it could have something to do with lings.
It's not. It's just an English variant of Jocelyn.
Nah, it's dubious.
Dubious. I feel the same way.
All right. Anyway, can animals do math? I mean, I know, yes, we're animals and we can do math, or at least the ones who aren't me can. But, like, can other animals do math?
Some animals can do math, but depends on what you mean by math. Like, there's animals can definitely do less and more. Like, they know when there's, like, more of something and less of something.
Sure.
Like, insects can do that, which is wild. And sometimes scientists will say, like, that counts as math. Like, you basically, like, you know something about quantities, and that's a basic principle of mathematics. But, like, do they? What does know mean? Does anyone know anything? Am I just a story that I tell to myself?
Yeah.
I
can answer that one. Yeah, you're a bacterial colony that's convinced itself it's an organism. It's incredible.
It's just a bunch of cells that are working together for some reason. We're not sure specifically about geese. And there's like a weirdness to geese where they seem to, like, geese, you know, we can't really say, but they seem to mourn sometimes. They seem to be sad when, like, a partner goose dies. They seem to be sad sometimes when like things go wrong with their eggs or with their babies, they seem to be sad. But also, like, it's not entirely clear that they consider their children their own.
There's
kind of a creche behavior where sometimes you'll see, like, ducks with, like, 72 ducklings behind them. There's, like, a documented case of a duck with 72 ducklings. Obviously, that's not all their ducklings. And so there's, like they all sort of work together and they take care of their kids together. And early on, like, you got to know that, you know, a minority of those ducklings are going to survive, or goslings are going to survive. And so there's probably less weight. Now, there's a lot. Like, they care. They definitely care. They're definitely trying. But my feeling would be that it's more likely that they've got, like, a vibe for that there is now less than there once was, or they can look and be like, that's the same amount, rather than being like, they definitely can't say that's 7 goslings.
Right. And do you think they can say, like, oh no, we lost little Petey?
You know, that's more interesting. That's also an interesting question. Like what is the, like, is there an identity where it's like, instead of counting, you just, like, we've got, you know, we've
they're
got
all
this,
here.
Yeah.
And I know they're all here, not because I can count them, but because there's Petey and there's Maya and there's Alfonso and
Yeah. It's great. Great work, John.
I love that idea.
I love
how much we don't know about animals. Ed Yong has a great book about this.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, we're sharing a planet with an astonishing amount of life.
Mm-hmm. That experiences the world in such vast, differently ways than us.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we it's hard enough to try to get inside the head of another human. Like, imagine trying to get inside the head of a goose.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Yeah. I would love to know if geese get happy and sad, but I don't know how to tell. Because I can't ask them how they're feeling, and it'd be weird to put them in an fMRI machine and then show them pictures of happy and sad things, because I don't even know what would make a goose happy and sad.
Yeah. Well, even that is not that reliable on its own. So it would be it's hard to know about animal emotions. It's not impossible. We have some ways in, but it's hard to know. This Ed Yong book is really good on that front. Y'all should read it. Oh, you know what else? Other book before we get to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, for the 7 people who are still listening. You know what book just came out that I love so much is my friend Kaveh Akbar's book, Martyr. So good. It's his first novel.
Right.
It's incredible. It's the last book I recommended to you was Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. This book is just as good as Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, except instead of being about video games, it's about art and addiction and love and aging and mortality. It's so good. Oh my God.
I'm excited. I have been having kind of a miss streak on books. I just assume that it's mostly my brain rather than the books, but I keep DNFing, which I don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. My brain also hasn't been finishing books lately, although this book was not a problem to finish. It's very page turny while still being just gorgeously written. Gorgeous.
Cool.
That's awesome. All right, Hank, it's time for the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. There's a lot of news from AFC Wimbledon this week, so do you want to go first?
I mean, I can. I don't know if you know this, but the people listening do. When we recorded,
the helicopter was fine.
Yeah, it was
back. And then
back.
3 days later, the helicopter is dead forever.
Yeah. I've recorded an update about the helicopter being dead forever, so that I have already delivered the news, because I couldn't let that episode go out without...
Okay.
Yeah, with the incorrect news. But that's still the news. Yeah. And it seems like it got back on its feet, but it seems like it tipped and one of the rotors hit the ground and broke itself.
Well, it is when we are sick and elderly that we are at our most vulnerable.
Yeah. Our carbon fiber parts are not indestructible.
No. You're telling me. You should see my L2 vertebra.
I've gotten a lot of scans, and one of the incidental findings is that I also have a couple of spots that may turn into trouble, but aren't yet.
Nope. Good. In your spinal column, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Great.
I don't even know which one.
We love an incidental finding.
They used words like L2. Yeah.
They use words like L2. It's probably the same one. We're going to be little disc twinsies. But yeah, hold off as long as you can. It's not comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry about the helicopter, man. That's a real bummer. It did a great job. It outlasted its mission, but nothing lasts forever. And speaking of nothing lasting forever.
I know this news too.
Our great Iraqi striker, Ali Alhamidi, the light of many Wimbledon fans' life, has left. He has left at the end of the January transfer window to join high-flying championship side Ipswich Town, favorites to be back in the Premier League next year. Really good football club. And, you know, it's a deal that obviously makes sense for him, because not only is he going to be playing in the second tier of English football, because they're doing so well this year, if he plays well, he has a real chance of being a Premier League footballer next year, and he'll still only be 22 years old, which is pretty, pretty special, obviously. So it's the right club for him. And I guess the deal makes sense from AFC Wimbledon's perspective, because it is over $1 million and it has the chance, depending on the add-ons and how many appearances he makes and whatnot, to be the biggest deal in the history of League Two. So it's hard to complain about what is potentially...
I mean, that makes the news even worse, though, because it means that, like, he was so much of the reason that we've been good.
I know.
That's what the people with the money are saying. They're saying, look at what he did for this team that isn't very good.
Right, exactly. So it's a real hard pill to swallow. But this is the reality that we're in as long as we're owned by our fans and we have this $10 million debt. So we have a $10 million debt that we basically owe mostly to ourselves, mostly to fans who put money into this bond, including me. And we have to pay it back over the next 20 years. And a lot of it is due in the next 5 years. And so we've just got to figure out ways to generate enough money that we have enough profit that we can pay down this debt. And obviously selling players is the best, easiest way to do that. It's unbelievable that Ali Alhamidi was only a Wimbledon player for 12 months, because he just left a huge imprint on this club and we will miss him so, so much. So that's been a tough pill to swallow. In better news, we played Mansfield Town, which is third in the table right now, and we were off on the back of two losses, and they got an early red card. They're definitely outplayed us that whole game. We got a good goal from Omar Bugel, our Lebanese striker. It was a really good goal, really happy with it. But then we gave up a stupid goal, poorly defended. We're not working with our best defense right now. Joe Lewis seems a little injured. Short shorts, he's a little bit injured. Ryan Johnson has a long-term injury. It's just kind of a mess in the back, and you could tell that on this goal that we gave up. And then it looked like we were actually going to give up a penalty in the last minute of the game and potentially lose. I was really frustrated, but the referee didn't call the penalty, which, great call. And then almost immediately we went down the field and scored a goal in the last minute of the game with our brand new striker, Ronan Curtis from Ireland. And I was like, oh my God, are we going to be okay after all? Like, is everything going to be fine? Is Ronan Curtis just going to be the new Ali Alhamidi? Probably not, but maybe, because we won that game. And like winning that game, that's a game that we 100% would have lost last season. And winning it this season, I was like, oh my gosh, like this team, we're still good. Now we have a lot of injuries, a lot more injuries than we had in December. I have a lot less confidence that we're going to make it to the playoffs. But I'll say this, Hank. We are only 9 points, 3 wins from our last 20 games away from making sure that we are not relegated. And that is awesome. So I try to take the positive. We're still playing well. We've still got a good team. Let's see if we can build on this and get somewhere by the end of the season.
All right. Well, I'm so glad to hear that there's also good news, because
the Ali Alhamidi news is brutal. Yeah. I mean, it's just, oh, I love him so much.
But like, you know, inevitable.
Inevitable. Inevitable at our level. And until we get to a place where we don't have to sell players to make up this debt, you know, it's just the way that it is. Like, you know, we're in a position where, you know, we need novelist supporters to kick in a little bit of money here and there to keep other players. There's ain't nobody in AFC Wimbledon's Rolodex who's like, oh yeah, I'll pay $1.5 million for to keep Ali Alhamidi at AFC Wimbledon. We got ways to go.
Yeah.
Well, Hank, thank you for potting with me. Thanks to everybody for your questions we didn't answer. We'll try to do better next week. We're at hankandjohn@gmail.com.
Yes. And if you like any of our ideas, let us know what you think about our ideas.
Also, if you hate them,
we don't have enough of those.
Let us know if you hate them. That's important information as well.
Definitely. Please poke holes. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna-Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Debucky Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.